from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Road Show.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
We just lost 2 points.
Oh, we are so glad you're back with us here on the Music Row Show. Thank you for listening in.
Yes.
You have no idea what happens during commercial breaks around here.
Oh, thanks
amazing.
For hanging out with us. Hey, we'd love for you to join in the conversation. Log on to facebook.com/themusicrowshow.com. A lot of you had already been chatting along with us on Twitter and Facebook today.
Absolutely. Thank you for all the participation. We love that.
And how do people find us on Twitter there, Hino?
You know what? It's pretty difficult. It's at The Music Row Show on Twitter and at The Music Row Show on Instagram and The Music Row Show on Facebook. So it's pretty complicated, but if you know the name of the show, you're about halfway there.
And the name of the show again?
The Music Row.
Okay. All right. Well, then I think we're doing pretty good.
I think we are.
Please introduce this fine gentleman with his chapeau on.
Oh.
Who's joined us in our studio tonight.
Yeah, I'm chapeauless, you know, so
yes,
I should have gotten the message. Well, we're going to bring you three. Count them, three big hit songwriters, but then we found one that's a bigger star than all three of those guys, so we sent them home. We got the one and only Sam Tate joining
us. Well,
that's
just mean. Tell the truth.
Well,
there.
Okay.
We had three.
They
one
called
of them
in
got sick.
And the other guy had some problems at home that he needed to take care of, which is hopefully everything works out okay. But we get to spend the evening with Sam Tate, big hit songwriter. You know a whole bunch of his songs. If You're Going Through Hell for Rodney Atkins, Somebody for Reba. Emerson Drive's Moments, that's a great song
big,
as well.
Big old hit.
Big old hit. Shut Up and Drive for Trisha Yearwood. So a lot of great songs, and he does a lot of other fun things on the side that we'll be talking about as well. So Sam Tate, welcome to the Music Row Show. We're so glad you're here with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
It's going to be fun. By the way.
Yes.
I need to correct you already.
Uh-oh. That's not unusual.
Shut Up and Drive with Shelley Wright.
Oh, Shelley Wright!
But there's a great story about that, as Trisha Yearwood heard the song after it was out, and she told Shelley, I wish I could have got that song before you. So it could have been Trisha.
Could have been Trisha. Okay.
Yeah. Almost. Well, and Hino, you did forget one thing.
Which is what?
8 years ago, when we started doing
that is right.
this radio program, Sam was one of our guests that very first night
our
we were ever on the air.
Show.
That's right. The very first show down on Music Row.
Uh-huh. That's right. Our very first show.
And Sam, we have not improved at all since then. I'm sorry about that.
We're just going to apologize now.
Yeah, it's not gotten any better.
Let her rip.
Hey, well, you know, the cool thing, though, is you guys have got the equipment looks better. The room is decorated. And we got valet parking.
Well, yeah.
You know,
there's a massage. There's a masseuse on the way out, too.
I already saw that.
Yeah.
Joe's already booked us in.
His name's Igor. He's great.
Nice
He's
hands,
great.
Though.
Really strong hands.
Don't mind the hump.
Don't mind the
hump. What hump?
Yeah.
You get tense before you get in there or after you get out?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's a little of both, actually.
No, but at that first show, it seemed like there were dark curtains all over the walls and everything.
Yeah, that was tobacco stains.
Yeah. They weren't really big on cleaning back at the old studio. So,
for those of you who don't know, we're actually in the Opryland Hotel, which is one of the biggest hotels in the world.
Yes, it
right?
is.
And we're right in the main lobby, so people are walking by with their luggage and, you know, in their nightgowns and stuff. It's kind of fun.
It is kind of fun.
Right.
Yeah, every once in a while, some fun things happens outside the window. We have to, you know, try to keep it together well.
Well, a friend of mine was going to come down dressed in a clown suit when he heard I was going to be on the show. He heard Bernie and all of us were going to be on the show. He's another co-writer of ours.
Right.
He was angry that he didn't get asked.
Well, you know why? Because we know him. We know who you are, T.C. McPappy.
Yeah, we know everything.
I've been to your house.
You.
I've been to the town.
You're right. It was T.C.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
yep.
right.
Yeah, I know. He's already been messaging in, so we'll have to get we'll get to some of that in a little while.
He's
so,
an insane person. Well, love him to death.
Now, the reason we're going to have Bernie and Dave and you here together is you guys have started hitting the road together. and performing. So I'm just kind of curious, what was the initial idea with you three joining forces, and who was the first one to regret the idea?
Well, what happened was, there's a really dive, dumpy, wonderful bar on Music Row called Bobby's Idol House.
Yes.
Yep.
It's one of my favorite places. It's a place up until last week you could still smoke and drink, and it had that aura of when Bernie and Dave and I got into the music business. We've all been in the music business over 30 years. And mm-hmm. when we first came to Nashville, that was the feel of the Nashville. That was every bar.
The whole town was like Bobby's
that.
Idol
yeah,
Hour.
It was yeah. Bobby's Idol Hour. And so that kind of encapsulated what Music Row was. And so we decided we wanted to do a show there and to kind of capture that old aura, you mm-hmm. know. And we ended up doing this show, and it was packed. The place, we just had an absolute ball. And we know each other's songs. And Bernie and I have known each other for quite a while. Dave and I have known each other, but we've never really worked together or done anything. But his songs are so amazing.
Oh, yeah.
He's just wonderful to listen to. And he tells great stories and great jokes, and he's really funny, and he's a good singer. And so we played that show there. And Bernie said, after it was over, Bernie said, we have to do this again. So we decided we were going to do another show. We ended up doing a TV show out at the college, and that was fun. And then this thing came up for us to do this thing for the Alive Hospice, which has turned out to get it. It seems like when we start to do something, it gets bigger than all of us. Now there's a guy coming down from Indiana from a guitar store who's given us two guitars that we're going to raffle off, and they're doing all kinds of other things that I thought we were just going to sit around and talk and play and sing. People were going to pay money, and then they were going to give that to Live Hospice. Well, now it's gotten to be a very cool event. It's going to be kind of like a real benefit.
And that's at the Bluebird Cafe.
It's at the Bluebird Cafe, and it's this Thursday night.
This Thursday night.
A little late show. It's a 9 o'clock show. And I hope it doesn't happen like the last time I played the Bluebird.
What happened?
Okay, what happened?
The last time I played the Bluebird. You know, the Bluebird Cafe, for those of you out there in the radio audience who don't know, is the cafe for writers. And it's set up so that writers are really appreciated.
Right.
The people there remind you, to be quiet and to listen and everything. And they really have good quality writers, the best Nashville has to offer. And I played a show with, it was with Gary Burr and Dave Berg.
Oh, wow.
And Doug Johnson and myself. And it was hit after hit after hit all night long. And we all knew each other's songs, so we were playing along and everything. And we just had a great time. And after the show was over, I smoked. So I immediately went outside on the front porch, to smoke a cigarette. And all the people are piling out. And here's this guy and his wife, and obviously their two friends, and they're all dressed up really nice and everything. And guy gets down to the bottom of the stairs, and he looks up at his wife, and he goes, I don't understand it. We each had to pay $30 to listen to four old guys play cover tunes.
Oh, now that's good.
That's a
Did
tough
you set
crowd.
Him straight?
No, I was so stunned. All I could think of was going back and telling everybody else what I had just heard.
Oh, that is funny.
That's hilarious.
I thought, somebody didn't get the one with the program, didn't get the memo. I don't know. But it just stunned me to play cover tunes. And I thought, wow, some people just don't get it.
They just don't get it.
Even at the Bluebird, famous, known for that, Oh, my gosh.
Wonderful.
So with the three of you hitting the road together and doing all these shows, I mean, I can't even imagine the crazy hijinks that happens when the three of you get put together. Any stories you can share on a good, clean family show?
No.
I didn't think so.
All right. And there's our show for
the
evening,
good night,
guys.
Everybody.
It's been great.
the one thing we, Dave Gibson loves to tell jokes.
Yeah.
And Bernie loves to tell. Bernie has a very dry sense of humor.
Right.
And Bernie loves to tell jokes. And so do I. So it at times, you can see the audience kind of getting nervous and saying, could you guys stop joking around and playing a song?
Uh-huh.
That's about the only thing. But we're having more fun cracking each other up. So,
right.
So we can't play. But, we're just starting out doing this. I think There's some people working on us doing a couple of festivals out in Colorado this summer and doing some dates down in Texas together. And it's just, it's cool because we all three of us come from kind of the same era of country music. And it's an exciting era. It was an exciting era in music. It was when there were so many writers in town, and yet so few that were just really stunning writers, and so few of us that are still around, you know, are still making music to today, that we're kind of the old guard.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to, you know, kind of be looked up to by the younger writers. And that, you know, it's sometimes it's a double-edged sword, you know, because sometimes it's kind of fun to be looked up to, and then it's kind of when you try and write with them, you can't understand anything they're saying. But
yeah, well, there's
it
that
has that side too. But it's you know, one of the things that all three of us like to do is we like to write with these younger people to show them, because our roots go, Dave and Bernie and I, you know, we know all the way back to you know, Hank Williams and to Ray Price, to Ernest Tubb, to all of that body of music was a part of our education. And it doesn't seem like it is for a lot of these younger kids. If you say something like, whoa, that sounds a little bit like a Merle Haggard thing, they'll go, who's Merle Haggard? You know, and we get the chance to educate them to that.
Right.
You know, to help keep that country, you know, vibe alive, to help keep that country history alive in the music as well. Because it's really important right now. You know, we're going through some, you know, growing pains in country music. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's a lot of controversy about the bro country thing and the rap country thing and the hip hop country thing. And music changes. You know, it's just
sure. It always has.
It always has. It always evolves. But the one thing that we want to do and that makes country music, it's the music of the people. And it always has been. And lyric and story have been the most important part of country music. And you can draw from Hank Williams. You can draw from, I mean, you can draw from Jimmy Rogers and all of those people. All of them, the stories evolve. Because times change and our culture changes and our values change, well, the stories change. But the essence and the heart of telling that story is what makes country music what it is. And so we get the chance to teach those younger writers about that kind of stuff when we get to write with them.
Yeah.
And we bring that. So it's kind of cool for us to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy it a whole lot.
Well, I've actually been pretty impressed. I've met lots of younger people recently who actually do listen to a lot of the old stuff and study it. So, I mean, it's,
yeah.
There is some of that and which I find refreshing. I mean, that's, I don't know that when I was a kid, if I would have done that so much, if listened to something from, you know, before.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I was a teenager, it was all, you know, that was just, oh, that's my parents' music. That's awful.
Yeah.
You know.
Well,
now I love it, but, you know, back then.
Well, when I came to Nashville, I've been here. I'll be a Nashville songwriter. I was a Nashville songwriter for 40 years this last November.
Happy anniversary.
And, yeah, it was, you know, 40. I didn't realize how fast it's gone, but it's, you know, 40 years in the business is a long time, and you see a lot of changes and a lot of evolution.
Sure.
And when I came here, I was in my 20s, and I was just ready at that time. I was just really ready. I had played out, and I'd had some songs recorded before I even came to Nashville, and I was really into the folk thing, really strong. And when I got here, I went through this evolution of writing country music, and I was really... I started getting records, and I had friends that would lend me records. And, like, I listened to the whole a compilation album of Hank Williams. You know, I listened to, like, Roy Orbison compilations and stuff like
that. Yeah.
And everybody I could, I just absorbed myself in it for, like, a year. And I got signed fairly quickly after I got to town.
Let's make that a little bit of a cliffhanger.
Dun, dun,
okay. Because we do have to take a break. Now, we also want to remind you that Bernie, Sam, Dave Gibson, they're all going to be at the Bluebird this Thursday for the late show for a live hospice. And even if it's sold out, there's pew and bar seating available. So get over there. And then also, we want to give a little plug to our friends over at Off the Hook.
Off
because
the Hook, yes.
Wednesday night,
that's right.
Off the Hook, if you've not heard of it, it's an improv.
It's like
comedy.
Whose Line Is It Anyway meets songwriters.
It's a contest. Yeah. So you get four songwriters up there, and the audience is yelling things out, and
you
have
to write something on the spot.
Make up songs on the spot. And normally it's been over at Douglas Corner. But
And will be again on
and
the 28th.
It will be again. But on Wednesday, it's going to be a concert window event, which is online. So all of our listeners all over the country can listen in. And we're actually going to be
The two of
a
us
couple
are
of
be
the
on
contestants.
There, along with some other great guys and gals, Auburn Stevens and Adam James, Diebolt, and a whole bunch of other folks. Concertwindow.com is where you want to check that out. It's on at 9 o'clock this coming Wednesday. Definitely.
9 o'clock
Central Come and hang
time.
With us on the interwebs.
That's right. And then also check out Off the Hook on Facebook. Look them up there.
Absolutely. We'll be back in just a few minutes with hit songwriter Sam Tate on The Music Row Show.
There's a sign there on your back that says I don't mind if you kick me. Seems like everybody has. Things go from bad to worse. You think they can't get worse than that, and then they do.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's if you're going through hell. Keep on going. You know that song. Rodney Atkins did that song, but that is the demo. Sam Tate, hit songwriter, was kind enough. He's our guest this hour, and he was kind enough to bring that demo along with us. We'll be playing a couple more later on in the show, but it's always kind of cool to hear, you know, how a song started out as and what the artist heard that made them say, yeah, I want to do that song. So that's cool. Quick shout out before we get going to listener Randy, Patricia, David, Richard, Nathan, Marjen, and Sam, all for listening tonight. Thanks for hanging out with us on Facebook and Twitter.
What was that children's show where she looked through the magic mirror and named kids?
Romper Room.
Romper Room. You just sounded like Romper Room.
Oh,
that was fun.
Oh, she never said my name. That little.
That's because she couldn't pronounce it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're here with Sam Tate, and you were telling us that you came to town and you got signed pretty quickly. Now what's pretty quickly? Is that 3 years? 5 years?
I was here 3 days.
What? Yeah. And that's it. We're done for the night, folks.
And you caught a 10-foot. Fish too, right? Now come on. No, 3 days?
I literally was here 3 days, and it just involved being in the right place at the right time. And
can you tell me where that place is
and
when I should be there
exactly? I was on tour, and this was the last date of a tour. I was on tour with Buffy St. Marie.
Okay.
And I was opening for her, and it was the last date of the tour. And when I came in, I saw a little newspaper that was, you know, a little local newspaper, and somebody else that I knew was playing at the Exit Inn.
Okay.
So I went over that evening, and I hung out with them because they were actually, I'm from Taos, New Mexico, mm-hmm. where I was raised. And it was Mason Williams. And he lived in Santa Fe, and some of the guys in his band had played in a band with me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you know, you meet somebody from home and you're in a strange town.
Sure.
I'd never been in Nashville before. Well, because Mason was well known, he'd had Classical Gas and, you know, the had become a big hit. We all went over to a studio, and I ended up hanging out at the studio with some people. I got invited to dinner at Pete Drake's house. And it was at Pete Drake Studios. I got invited to dinner. They asked me to play some songs, and I got signed actually that night in Pete's den.
Wow.
In Franklin. And but the thing is, I left, I went away, went home, got my stuff, and I came back, and I walked into Pete's studios, and an old friend of mine that I knew from Denver, Colorado, was a producer, and he had just moved here, and his name was Russ Miller. He was a wonderful man. And he said, Sam, what are you doing here? And I said, Russ, what are you doing here? And he goes, well, I've moved my offices, and I've got an office here at Pete's. And I said, well, I just signed as a writer to Pete Drake. And he goes, really? He said, duh. That's great. What kind of draw are you getting? And I said, what's a draw?
Oh, you left out that part, huh?
I really didn't. I had no clue that you got paid.
Mm.
I didn't have any. I thought you wrote songs and went out and played gigs, you know, or did whatever.
Right.
I didn't know that you got paid to write. And Russ put his arm around me and goes, okay, listen, I know Pete real well. I'll go up and deal. And so he went up, and I got $50 a week to write songs.
Sweet.
And the first check I got, I realized, I like stood there and I had tears in my eyes. I said, you get paid to do what you love, you know, and it's that always has meant so much to me. You know, you get paid to do what you really love to do. I've never forgot that moment. Even though that building is gone, you know, it's torn all that stuff down. But that was, You know, that was the very beginnings of my career.
That's awesome.
There's a lot of buildings gone right now.
That's true, and more leaving every day. Now, we can't really pay you much, but would you mind doing what you love for us right now?
And by not pay you much, he means nothing.
Nothing at all, really. Yeah.
You guys pick up the Coke, won't you?
Yeah, yeah. Sure, sure. I'll pick it up.
Okay.
And move it right over there.
This kind of sums up what I do, what me and all of us do.
Hey, you. You in the back of the room, listening to me like you can't believe I know you like I do. Yeah, you. You with the scars that you hide, wondering how I figured out the story of your life. I ain't no magic mirror on the wall. I ain't no psychic with no crystal ball. I'm just the music someone had to play, the words you thought but couldn't say, some midnight poet's version of the truth. And if by chance I make you cry, fall in love or say goodbye, or find some meaning in your misspent youth, I'm just a song, and that's just what songs do. Hey, you, turning it up to the max, tear in your eye and wondering why you run and can't go back. Yeah, you, you with the radio on, trying to find among these rhymes a reason to go on. I can't tell you what the answer is, I can't make you any promises. I'm just the music someone had to play, the words you thought but couldn't say, some midnight poet's version of the truth. And if by chance I make you cry, fall in love or change your life, find some meaning in your misspent youth, I'm just a song, and that's just what songs do. Yeah, and if by chance I make you cry, fall in love or say goodbye, or teach you that you're not the world's first fool, I'm just a song, and that's just what songs do.
Beautiful.
Very nice.
Wow. Well, I was going to play a game with the three of you, but now it's going to be a one-person game. And the bad news is you're not going to be able to hear what they were going to say, but I was going to ask each of you to say, since you three are hitting the road here and there and playing together, what is it you admire about each of them as writers? What do you feel like their strengths are? What do you love about them creatively?
Well, Bernie's just keeping it country. Mm-hmm. You know, he's in the tradition of George Strait and Alan Jackson and that crowd. He's really a connoisseur of country music, and the songs he writes are wonderful. You know, he had the big hit that he had, "Daddy Never Was a Cadillac Kind." Mm-hmm. He actually wrote that with Dave Gibson, right? Mm-hmm. And Dave is, he's like a sage writer. I call those guys sages. I mean, they're very thoughtful. And he wrote "Ships That Won't Come In," was a huge
hit for Joe Diffie.
Joe Diffie, yeah.
And that, I mean, Dave really thinks over the words and what he has to say. Even if he writes a funny song, I so wish he was here, because he has this great song called "The Frog."
Mm-hmm.
And have you heard "The Frog"? Mm-hmm. Have you heard the song?
Yeah. I think he might have done it on the show.
I think so. But tell us about it.
It's "The Frog," and he goes out on the deck, and he's at his office, and he goes back on the deck, and he sees this frog. And he has this incredibly wonderful philosophical discussion with a frog about songwriting. And basically the frog, you know, is basically wants a piece of the publishing. You know, it's, but it's such a great song, and he takes, you know, such an innocuous thing, you know, like a little frog, and turns it into this wonderful, you know, piece of human life and piece of a writer's, you know, story that people that are able to do that just amaze me. I love to listen to people sing songs that are, that have that wonderful twist on life, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of them out there that can do it and do it so well. But Dave's one of the best. He really is.
Hmm. So what do you think they would, if they were here, what would they say about you? Let's play that game.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, at least I don't owe him any money.
There you go.
That Sam can really take a punch. Let me tell you.
Yes.
Yeah, boy, can he drink a lot.
Tell you.
And he has pretty good taste in cigars. But, you know, we just have fun together when we write. And we just enjoy each other's creativity. And that's something that's... We get the nuances of each other's songs as well, and where mm-hmm. they came from, and that's hard to find in people. You know, people are a lot really self-absorbed in their own work and everything else, neither Dave nor Bernie has any ego about what they do. They just really love doing it for the sake of doing it, and doing it for the sake of making something really cool, making cool music and cool art, and that's what I love about working with them. You know, it's really, really a great experience.
That's cool.
Sweet. Well, listen, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of hit songwriter Sam Tate here on The Music Row Show.
Shut up and drive. You don't know what you're talking about. He's not the one. You ought to know that by now. You've got one of those. That keeps changing your mind. Your heart's got a way of making mistakes. So shut up and drive. Don't look in the mirror.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with hit songwriter Sam Tate, and that, of course, was a big old hit for Shelley Wright, Shut Up and Drive. And that's the demo of that song, which is really cool to hear. I love the way it just starts cold. Just no intro, it just starts. That's awesome.
You know, that song was an interesting song because it started out as a totally different song. It really did. It started out as a song. The melody originally went, shut up and drive, it's 4:45, and I've got a date in Laredo. And it just seemed, this is just dumb. And it just wasn't working for me. But I love that concept of shut up and drive.
Right.
And one night, I couldn't sleep. It was like 3 in the morning, and I couldn't sleep. And I had just put new strings on my guitar, and it had that real chunky feel to it. You know,
sure.
It was really cool. And I just started going, dum, 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 dum. And I said, shut up and drive. And I went, whoa, I got it. I got the song. I got it. And it really came together after that because I realized I wanted it to be her conscience talking to her.
Uh-huh.
And it gave it that urgency, you know, that pressing beat that was doing, it gave it that urgency. And I wanted it to be, and then I thought of all of the things her conscience could say to her. And I knew, it just happened. But it really didn't start out to be that.
Wow. I like that.
Something that struck me as I listened to both of those demos is how similar they are to the finished product, and things have changed a bit in Nashville as far as how things are getting demoed, and you know, in that climate change, how are you guys demoing now? Are you still doing full band? Are you just doing guitar vocals? Are you doing drum loops and layering? I mean, how have you guys adjusted?
Well, it runs a gamut. Some things I think warrant that full demo more, you know, more traditional type of things warrant that full demo. But the stuff like the new stuff that I'm writing with, you know, people like Dave Berg and some of those people, we're doing a lot of like looping things and mm-hmm. then building tracks. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing a lot more of that because it seems like that's what the producers want right now.
Right.
Is they're because they're doing their own thing. Used to, like when Shut Up and Drive was written, and when If You're Going Through Hell and Moments, and I had a producer one time. I said, "Man, thank you so much for cutting my song." He goes, "Man, thank you for making my work easy. The demo was perfect."
Right.
You know, and that seemed to be the thing in that time. But now it seems to be changing, and they want to hear. I've got actually a couple of producers that want to hear just guitar vocals.
Really?
Because they want to. You know, they want to bring themselves to the song, which I really admire. I think that's really cool, because I have a hard time. It almost kind of bugs me that I put all the work into the song,
and they get a producer credit.
They get a producer's fee for it, you know. But it you know, because you know, we did the arrangement. You know, we sat and did the arrangement, and then they copy it. I had somebody the other day play me a song that was a new artist, and they were jumping up and down. This is going to be a single. This is going to be a single, and they played me the song, and I said, "No, wait a minute, that's the demo."
Oh,
and they said, no, this is the song, don't worry. And I swear to God, what they did was they took our tracks and put their vocals on it, because it's identical. It's note for note identical to what we wrote.
Did you send them the tracks, or how did they get the
tracks? I don't know. Yeah. You know, maybe they got them from the publisher or something, but I don't know. But either that, or they were really good at copying the demo, because it's in the same key and everything. Right. It was just perfect. But I like these guys, you know, like Jared Neiman's producer.
Right.
Jared's producer, all he wants to hear is vocal guitars. And he's a very creative guy. And he does, he makes great records. And I think that's when I first came to town, I've sat actually in a studio where they were in a master recording session, and I've walked in and they said, "Yeah, Pete said you're going to play us a song." And I sat down and played a guitar vocal, just sat and played my guitar, and the musicians charted it and they tracked it. And the guy says, "Could you write out the lyrics for me?" And they wrote out the lyrics for me. And you may have to come back and help with the vocals, making sure we get the melody right. Just from a guitar vocal, they made the record.
Wow.
You know, I had that happen several times in master sessions.
So you pitched it and it got cut all in the same session?
No. Well, they had, somebody had like Pete Drake had said something to somebody about it. And he said, "You got to hear this new song."
Right.
And they said, "Well, send him over. I think this is perfect for so-and-so. And send it over here." And so he says, "Well, I don't have it demoed yet. I can send Sam over and have him play it for you." And so they're in a master session. They're getting ready. And I play the song. And he goes, "Yeah, chart that, guys. Can you do it again?" You know, and I do the run through the song. And then they'd say, "Can you write the lyrics down?" And sure enough, they'd cut it right there.
Wow.
Or they'd even do a real quick, just a little quick two-track recording of it. I just walk into the vocal booth and do a two-track recording, just sit on a stool and play it. And they go, "That's perfect, dude." And they'd chart it and cut it.
That's amazing.
Can I have a copy of that?
Yeah, can I get a copy?
That's my demo.
That was the old days. You know, that happened quite often back in the old days. And I can remember when, years ago, I worked with Shel Silverstein on Bobby Bear's records. And it was so much fun. Shel was so brilliant, man. He was just exquisite. When he'd come in the studio, he'd have three books. And he had a sign over him. And he had this table laid out. And he'd have three books open. Great big drawing books, you know, artist books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was a sign over it. It says, "Touch any of this and you will immediately die." That was in this big sign. And one was a book of drawings, because, you know, he did all the illustrations for those books.
Right.
Another was a book of poetry. And another was a book of music. And he would run back and forth from the studio. He'd be working on something. And he would go, "You know what? I don't think that lyric is right." And he would rewrite it as we were cutting it.
Wow.
As we were doing it. And I mean, literally, this is writing on the fly, making a master record. And he's rewriting the song here. "No, I think we need to change that." And that kind of stuff used to happen. I haven't seen that happen in a very long time. But that was creativity at its utmost, I thought. You know, it was very cool.
Wow.
Man.
Let's take one last break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk Sam into playing one more song for us. You're listening to The Music Row Show. We should also mention this segment is brought to you by our friends over at Toyota of Cool Springs.
That's right. Scott and I are both Toyota drivers. We love those cars. And more importantly, we love Toyota of Cool Springs.
Yeah. They have great deals. And their motto is excellent deals. And they're going to make sure that they give you an excellent experience. They have a lifetime warranty with unlimited time and miles on every new car, a 3-day exchange policy, and they're just low-key and friendly and just cool to hang out with.
That, That is absolutely true. Ask for George. He's the owner. He'll take great care of you. Toyotaofcoolsprings.com.
Yeah, we're going to be right back with more of Sam Tate on The Music Row Show. Stick around.
The hitchhiking figure grew bigger and bigger till a fully formed woman appeared in the dawn. He pushed the door open, said the radio's broken. I could show you some company if you're coming, come on. They drove on in silence for mile after mile, till finally she said one thing. Too bad about the radio, we've got a ways to go. Hope you don't mind if I sing. She sang Home on the Range, Sweet Baby James, and the night they drove old Dixie down. She sang her heart out right onto her sleeve, like a bird that just had to be free, or the daughter of Bobby McGee.
Oh yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's by special request from listener T.C. McPappy. And that is the brand new single on our guest this hour, Sam Tate, hit songwriter Sam Tate, and that's called Daughter of Bobby McGee. Tell us about that song and the story behind writing it.
And the CD.
And the CD.
Well, the Daughter of Bobby McGee came about just because I was a huge Kristofferson fan, and he was a big influence on my life. And I've always loved that feel of the road type of music. And I was on my way out here and I saw this girl on the side of the road. I'd actually moved to LA for a little while and then I came back to Nashville. I went out to LA to write for another company and I was on my way back and I saw this girl on the side of the road and she had this kind of weird, just look to her, like she looked almost Janis Joplin-ish.
Oh.
Okay, on the side of the road. And I wasn't about to pick anybody up that looked kind of weird and Janis Joplin. So I just kept on driving.
Jump on in.
I was in the middle of the desert, you know, and I was alone and I didn't have a weapon. And, you know, it could have gotten ugly. But there was something about her. And I always thought, I said, man, what if that's the daughter of Bobby McGee? And I kept that title for a long time. And then one night I just sat down and started writing it. And because I remember that time when I drove across country, and I kept it. And so the song's actually, it's about 15 years old, 15, 16 years old. Wow. But it's going to be my first single. You know, I'm 63 years old. And when I was younger, I had a couple of record deals that nothing ever happened with. And I really concentrated. I didn't, you know, just kind of left that and said, I'm going to focus on being a writer. And now, and I've always played out and done shows and done writer's shows and stuff and some festivals. But I decided that after 40 years in the business, I wanted to do, I have two adopted daughters, and you've met my girls.
I have, yeah.
And was your wife one of
them? My wife was their figure skating
coach.
That's
right. She was their figure skating
coach. That's right.
Your wife was their figure skating coach. And they... Brenna, by the way, is still competing and doing fantastic.
Oh, awesome.
It's awesome. She just is a joy to watch. But anyway, I have two grandchildren, and now with my new wife, I have a ton more grandchildren.
Great.
And I wanted to do an album. I've seen so many of my friends in the last couple of years. You know, this last few weeks ago, we just lost AJ Masters and Henry Strzelecki, who was a great, amazing bass player. And he was my neighbor and my great friend. He wrote Long Tall Texan. And I wanted to do a record just for me, for my grandkids, my kids, to say, this is what Daddy sounded like. This is what Grandpa sounded like. And I had a little bit of extra money, and I said, I'm just going to go in and do this little 10-song album. Well, my business partner and manager said, well, you know, maybe we can get some airplay for this or put it on iTunes. Well, now it's gotten on iTunes and it's selling, and it got picked up by some radio group in England and was on the country countdown in England. And we haven't even, now we've decided we're going to release a single in the United States. and Bobby Terry is producing it, and he's an amazing producer. And so he's producing it. So I'm 63 years old, and I'm going to start having groupies again. But they're the kind that throw Depends on the stage.
Oh, that's hot.
Lucky you. Or their teeth. Yeah,
we're doing the nursing home tour.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice.
And if you know, I'm going to do these posters that'll fit on a walker.
Yeah.
That'd be cool, don't you?
I think that's a very smart thing to do.
But anyway, it just kind of exploded into this thing that's kind, and it's fun. And I'm old enough now to just realize it's fun. And whatever happens, it happens. And if nothing happens, I've still reached my original goal. My original goal was to make something for my children and my grandchildren.
And what's the name of the CD, and where do people find it on iTunes?
Well, the CD's not done yet.
Okay.
We're in the middle of recording it, and it's called Play It Again, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And it's going to be most of my recordings of the hits, and then I'm going to do four originals, and The Daughter of Bobby McGee is one of them. And right. I'm going to do four original songs on there, new songs. And I'm fired up about it. I think, and I'm just having a lot of fun. And Bobby is so talented. Bobby Terry is so talented. And the people that are playing on the stuff and are going to play on the album are just so talented that it's just really, really a fun experience, and there's no pressure. You know, I go in there and just do what I do, and it's going
right.
to be cool. So
that's nice.
We're having fun with it.
Now, you also, we got about 4 minutes here, but you do an awful lot of work for veterans organizations.
Yeah.
Please talk about that.
Well, I'm a Vietnam vet myself, mm-hmm. and I kind of left that world behind. When I got back, we were treated so badly, you know, and I got out at Fort Carson in Colorado, and it just... You know, I really wanted to divorce myself totally from it, forget about the whole thing. And it wasn't until many years later that I sort of got back into it in a weird way. I wrote a song. I actually was on a river in Montana,
mm-hmm.
and I got there real early to this spot that I wanted to fish, and there was a guy there, and I couldn't get to the spot. And he fished, he was in the hole, I fished down the bottom. Well, he caught this really nice fish, and he took him way down back towards me. And when I saw him, I leaned down, I said, dude, that is a huge fish. That's a great fish for this river. And I said, man, that's a mounter if you want. And he goes, no, I'm going to let him get his wind back because he's letting me get mine. And I looked up, and he had scars all down his face that you could tell were shrapnel scars and were fairly new. And I just put my hand on his shoulder. I said, welcome home, dude. And I knew then that I had to write that. And I wrote it originally as a short story. And Dave Berg saw the short story, and we wrote it as a song. And that song became, some people picked it up. That I fish with that are professional fishermen, and they picked it up and took it to a show, and they called me and they said, you've got to talk to this group from Project Healing Waters. And it's a veterans organization that takes our wounded veterans fly fishing.
Huh.
And it started as a program for eye-hand coordination for amputees, and they taught them how to tie flies.
Okay.
And then they developed a casting regimen that to help them build upper body strength. And so they taught him how to tie flies. They taught him how to cast. And then they said, hey, you taught us how to do this. Take us fishing. So now they have chapters all over the United States that take our wounded veterans fishing. And they organize these trips. And you become a part of the program. And they take people on outings. And the goal of this is to bring our soldiers back mentally into what it is to live in this country, what it is to enjoy life, what it is to have fun and make friends for life. It's not, let's just take them on a fishing trip and we're done. They become part of this organization. We get involved with Trout Unlimited and Federation of Fly Fishermen. And so it becomes this organization that they work with. And I love to fly fish. You know, I like to write music. I like to go out and hang out with the soldiers and, you know, fish and drink beer. We have a blast. And it's just exploded from there. I work now with Able Forces. I'm on the board of American Freedom, and just keep going.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us. We've had a great time hanging out with you again, all the way back from our first show. Go check out Sam Tate's new album when it comes out.
Go see him Thursday at the Bluebird Cafe.
That's right. And hey, if you're not doing anything Wednesday night, go to concertwindow.com and check out the Off the Hook show at 9 o'clock Central. Scott and I will be on there along with some other people. It'll be a hoot.
All right.
So until we see you next week, we'll see you on the Music Row Show. We'll be right back.